This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, there are two Royal Navy ships patrolling the waters around Jersey today after an attempted blockade by French fishermen. Katie, what is going on?
Yes, this is a news story dominating today rather than various politicians heading to the polls to cast their vote. Now, this all comes down to this current disagreement, the fact that French fishermen are very unhappy over new licenses which issued on Friday last week that restrict the number of days they can operate in shared waters. It also goes to can you prove you've been fishing in these waters for a certain period of time in the past? And some say they have been, but people are quibbling whether or not they have the proof. And what this has led to is ultimately a blockade and a standoff which is emerging and a heightening of tensions between both sides. As you say, you have two British naval patrol vessels, one of which is apparently very eco-friendly, which have arrived off the coast of Jersey, and there are about 80 French boats which are gathered in a protest over the post-Brexit rules on fishing. The running commentary is you have Downing Street on the record saying that the response from the French side, because the French government appeared to generally backing the actions of these fishermen rather than condoning it, is disproportionate. There have been threats from the French side that potentially you could have the lights go in Jersey because they help provide that if they don't bend on the fishing rules. And the UK side are coming out quite strong against it, some on the record, but then also various off the record quotes, which, as you can expect, are slightly more fruity in terms even the Germans didn't do this in World War II in terms of the lights. And also you had a quote to political saying there was small energy regarding a man's private part.
We like to keep things nice and sanitised on this podcast. James, why has this escalated so quickly? And how is Great Britain going to deal with these sort of disputes in the future?
I think this is the point, which is, if you think back to the negotiation of the Brexit deal, Boris Johnson and Emmanuel Macron got into a kind of very alpha male standoff over fishing rights. And you can in some ways see this as a kind of continuation of this. The French fishermen are objecting to the new process, but how this process has escalated from the French fishermen objecting to the licensing regime and the two most important military powers in Western Europe who conduct, under the San Malo Accords, conduct joint defence exercises, etc., etc., facing off each other in the Channel, I think is the question here. There obviously needs to be some mechanism for resolving these disputes that don't involve gunboats being sent out into the Channel to make a statement. And I think this is the fundamental challenge of the post-Brexit relationship, which is it will not be to either side's medium or long-term benefit if this relationship becomes and stays this scratchy, with the two sides rhetorically ramping up at the slightest provocation. I have to admit, last night my eyebrows rose when I saw that these two Navy patrol vessels had been sent. But there is a slight justification for it, given that there appears to be a plan by French fishermen to blockade the harbour, and also the French government's, French minister's rhetoric about cutting off Jersey's electricity supply. That's hardly that's the kind of language you would expect from kind of Vladimir Putin, not from a close democratic ally of the United Kingdom. And I think everyone needs to learn. But then the quotes that Katie was saying, that they're clearly not helpful either. And I think everyone needs to find a way to calm things down and to prevent these minor disputes ramping up so much. And there's such a contrast yesterday. A couple of hours before the statement about sending the patrol vessels to Jersey, we saw a very important, I think, document from the G7 foreign ministers, because this is the beginning. The US is obviously been an important part of this. The UK holds the presidency. But this was an important moment because this was, I think, the kind of democratic world beginning to properly push back on Russia and China. The move in the rhetoric and the language around Taiwan is significant. This is the EU side and the European Union member states, who are also members of the G7, taking a much firmer position on Taiwan than they have previously, and rightful pushback on Russia and its actions. But it's hard not to think that Vladimir Putin will not be having a chuckle in the Kremlin this morning at watching the two most significant military powers in Europe having a fishing boat face-off today. I mean, everyone needs to find a way to sort this out if the geopolitical unity of the West is not to be hugely undermined.
Katie, I think also you look at it, and I have to say, a slight cynic might say, this isn't the most damaging story for the government on polling day, you know, talking tough on Brexit against the French in terms of boats. But, and I imagine on a similar side, in terms of the French domestic audience, the fact you're standing up to the Brits on the Brexit. But as James points out, I think the problem is we're now at the point where there is a deal, there is a treaty, sides have signed up to it. It's almost as though both sides need to refrain now from upping the ante for domestic audience and actually find a way to make it work.
And Katie, just talking about the G7 a little bit further, a spokesman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry has responded to that statement that James mentioned, accusing G7 foreign ministers of blatantly meddling in China's affairs. How has this summit between foreign ministers gone so far?
Well, there's been some obvious bumps, one being the fact there have been cases of COVID amongst the Indian delegation and they have had to self-isolate, joining remotely. And we've seen from that Boris Johnson having to deny that having it in person was a bad idea. I think that it shows a problem in terms of the UK this year has a role to play as in terms of its leadership, because it's hosting G7 and it's hosting COP26. Well, Boris Johnson gets his way and it isn't postponed. And really, the Prime Minister wants to have these events in person because he thinks, and his supporters and colleagues think, that he works much better in a room than on Zoom. And you can reach more agreement that way. But clearly, we're seeing today the slight problems when you do things like that. And it's weighing off the balances. But I imagine the cases in the Indian delegation doesn't sound like they're catastrophic, but I think that if you were looking at those trying to say, should COP26 really be happening in November, when we don't think that this pandemic is going to be over across the world, even if the UK is hopefully in a much better place, things like this could be cited as an example to be cautious. Now, I think in terms of what we're seeing on China, you're seeing the kickback from China. It clearly is a step to get everyone to sign them up, but it wasn't accompanied with direct action. You know, it's a statement of disapproving, but we're yet to get to that point where I think you're seeing unified, well, this is what we're going to do to accompany a statement. So there's some work to go there.
I think Katie is clearly right. The US is out front on the China question. The UK tucked in kind of closely behind along with Australia. And I think the Japanese are in a similar place as well about the issues here. I mean, the fascinating questions here is a kind of historical irony. If the German Greens end up taking the Chancellery, and they are currently ahead in the polling averages of the Union, the CDU-CSU combination, but that, I think, will have a big impact, because I think that would move Germany to a tougher position on both Russia and China. I think that would shift the gravity of Western foreign policy on these challenges. I think the other thing that we've seen at the G7 this week, which is the kind of the difference it makes when the US wants to lead. You know, you had a bizarre period in the Trump world where Trump would kind of not sign off on any G7 communiques. Everyone can remember that remarkable photograph of him at breakfast with kind of Angela Merkel and all the other leaders haranguing him. And I think what you've seen is that, you know, when Biden administration initially kind of declared America's back, we're ready to lead again, there was a definite European hesitation about whether they wanted to sign up to this. Macron was still keen on the concept of European strategic autonomy. The Germans were emphasizing don't divide the world into camps. I think China's behaviour has made that easier. I thought the tweet last night by Heiko Maas, the German foreign minister, talking about democracy versus authoritarian regimes, you know, that is dividing the world into two camps, to be frank. And I think that shows how the centre of diplomatic gravity on the China question is moving.
And finally, we do have voters going to the polls across the country, Katie, and we will have full coverage of the results as they come through in the next few days on Coffee House. We also have some great guides on Coffee House on what to expect and when. Katie, how are things looking today?
So in terms of when we get results in, it is, as you say, a very drip-drip weekend of it. So I think, as we've been discussing on the podcast, we're going to get Hartlepool first, and therefore that's what the focus is. But it does also mean it will define how things look. But we're not really going to have a clear impression of the whole picture until Monday, which is, I think, when we get the police crime commissioners. And that, I think, is one of the final results. But I think in terms of, we've had the closing statements from Keir Starmer, from Boris Johnson. I think that it's quite clear both sides are desperate to lower expectations. I think the problem potentially for the Tories is that I don't think they have succeeded in lowering expectations, because there are so many polls now just suggesting that they are really far ahead and potentially could, in terms of that big three in England, get all of those. Does that mean it's going to look disappointing if they miss out by one? Potentially. But again, I think it's very hard for a party to play down expectations too much when you're consistently getting polls suggesting that they have comfortable leads in all these areas, whereas Labour don't have that problem because the most optimistic recent polls for Labour have been that they're only 5% behind in Westminster voting intention rather than, you know, 10. And then today we have a YouGov poll which suggests actually, no, it is a double point digit lead that the Tories have over Labour. So I think that from the expectation point of view, Labour don't have to do much now to do better than expected, but there are questions, I think, nerves as to whether they can.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.